and plankton. Gather more. Elements and currents, ride them roughly should they try to dry us dead with their chicanery. And instead, destroy them, winds of outraged nature, lest they change the nomenclature of the universe. Oh, stop them! Let us stop them with our passion, should they try their fearful fashion of expand and conquer on us. Let us dwell and wash them all away for good, and clean the earth of what they wrought as cruel men. And then we'll start again and be a world ruled by more of the fish species. Sea creatures that are all included in oceanic membership. I know it's hard to conceive, but you must believe. There is beyond our mortal sky a place where the spirit of our ancestors dwell.
Did you recognize yourself there, fellow?
Fellow human!
Voice of the voiceless, fish species from the Gulf of Mexico, rendered by Lincoln Chase, here today on Earthwatch on WBAI in New York and WBAI.org on the web. My name is Robert Knight.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning is Daniel Jose Holder, author of Salsa Nocturna, musician, and soon to be, with your help, editor. Stay tuned.
Everyone says I love you. The great big mosquito when he's stinging you. The fly when he gets stuck on the fly paper too says I love you. Every time the cow says moo, she's making Whoopi very happy too. The rooster in the barnyard singing cock-a-doodle-doo says I love you. Columbus, he write the Queen of Spain a very nice a little note. And he's right, I love you, baby. And then he gets himself a nice a big boat. He's a wise guy. What do you think Columbo do when he's coming here in 1492? He says to Pocahontas, what you got, goo. That means you little son of a gun, I love you. There are only 8 little letters in this phrase you'll find, but they mean a lot more than all the other words combined. Everywhere, the whole world through, the king in the palace and the peasant too, the tiger in the jungle and the monkey in the zoo says I love you.
You'd almost be thinking if there were a woman in which Marx Brothers movie has that song in it. I don't recall. But it's one where everybody is doing it. Oh, please forgive. God, I turn on my guest mic and all of this noise in the background from the hallway. Listen to this, gang. Do you hear that? You know, not only are you hearing the sounds of WHCR, you know, within whose confines we are sharing a basement portion of CCNY, but you hear this alarm noise, and nobody seems to know.
Yeah, that's annoying.
It really is. And when it's on the air, it's even better.
I can only imagine.
So this is how people know whether I've pre-recorded my show at home.
Right.
Like I did last week. Because when I'm on mic from home, it sort of sounds, you know, like I'm swallowing the mic. And then the interview hopefully sounds okay. Versus being live here. Now, this week I'm live here because we have Daniel Jose Holder as our guest. Next week, Rick Bowes.
Excellent.
Will be here live. The week after that will be a program at the interview, at least, with Catherine Lundoff was recorded at Barwell Studios. So we will hear how that comes up. But I will probably come here to present it live. Now, before we talk about any of those things, we have to talk about, well, the potential survival of this radio station. I mean, you really ought to see, or maybe you shouldn't, the conditions in which we're operating down here.
It's better they don't see it, I think.
Better
they miss it.
Yeah, on the other hand, seeing it might cause them to donate.
I know I'm going to after this experience.
But having moved out of 120 Wall Street and coming up here to Harlem, to a lovely neighborhood, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, when you're traveling from Brooklyn, the neighborhood is lovely. The subway, not so much.
Not at all.
Yeah, really.
It's a distance.
But it's a distance, and then we come to these facilities that, despite the work of a whole like three or four people who have been tasked with turning this space into a station where they don't even acknowledge that it is WBAI, Max and I, just before the program, actually went, you know, taking WHCR little triangles off the microphone saying, we're paying for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is mm-hmm. WBAI. And so that counts for two out of the three mics in this room. And then on top of that, you hear the noise. And all of this has to be taken care of. Now, yes, we're spending less. We were paying $33,000 a month up at 120 Wall Street. Now, this space doesn't come for free. We're paying somewhere between $5,000 or $6,000 a month over here. So, you know, not to mention the cost of the move itself, plus whatever storage facility mm-hmm. half the equipment is in. But that's not all there is, you see. There's this other room that we have to pay for, and it is called the transmitter. And the address is a very easy one to figure out. It's in the Empire State Building. And if we do not have a transmitter on the Empire State Building, we are not broadcasting. And that costs upwards, or actually over, $50,000 a month. So we have gone into the emergency WBAI transmitter fund with the absolutely impossible task of raising $250,000 by March 31st. Well, lo and behold, we've made it. So much for its being impossible. But then, lo, April 1st, guess what? The next month's rent is due. April 1st, another $50,000. And guess what happens May 1st? You guessed it. Same thing, June, July, August. And then, oh yeah, I mentioned Max. And Sydney's here too. These guys are on what they call payroll. Well, that means they don't, not that they roll for their pay, but that somebody's got to pay them so that they can do the editing, the engineering, the work that needs to be done to keep a radio station going. There's also a station manager and various people who think that for working 70, 80 hours a week, they deserve money. I'm not sure why that is, but, you know, 80 hours a week, you know, they ought to get a subpar salary. The point is, we're not done. Our thon is not done. Our fundraising is not done. We had a benefit tonight at SOB, Sound of Brazil, which, from what I could tell by looking at it afar from Facebook, I couldn't be there because I had to prepare for here, and I had a conflict with tonight. But, yeah, as far as I can tell, now, you know, I'm supposed to say everything's crap, it's going poorly. I'm sorry to say it went well.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, well, how about that? Yeah.
I'm happy about that.
We're making the money that we're making, but we're doing it only because when we do pitches like the one you're hearing at this very moment, people respond. And that is why we're asking you to call right now to donate to the WBAI Transmitter Fund at area code 516-620-3602. Again, 516-620-3602. Or you can go to the web And you can go to a specially designated webpage, which is, now don't type this in yet because it's weird, okay? It's, okay, the concept is simple. Give to WBAI.org, except that it's the numeral 2. It's give number 2 WBAI.org. And if you go there, you can donate $5, $10, $25, whatever it may be, and that will help us along. Okay, you can hear the people going into HCR, right?
It's like a party in the background.
Yeah, well, it is a party in the background.
It's like a Marvin Gaye song going on behind us.
You know what? I'm actually going to close that door. Max should be able to find his way into this room.
Oh, boy. We're breaking the rules now.
Yeah. I'm going to keep the wedgie.
Oh, that is so much better, though.
Keep the wedge in the door. So that it's open slightly. There we go.
Oh, my goodness. Piece of quiet.
Is that like somebody just took, you know,
like I'm on vacation.
A needle out of your ear?
Yes. God bless.
Isn't that so much better?
I'm glad you did that. I was going to do it if you didn't.
Yeah. And I've actually wedged it so that Max or whoever can get in.
He'll figure it out.
And I don't know who's going to be on after me. I mean, it's supposed to be Lister, but the last few months, it's last few weeks, I've only been here a month. It's been Ahmad Ali. Lister had to go to Jamaica for a funeral. And no, not Jamaica, Queens.
I didn't think so.
Yeah. So hopefully that is nothing unexpected. But, you know, those things are never pleasant.
No.
Regardless.
True.
So again, 516-620-3602. The reason is self-explanatory. You like WBAI, if you want WBAI to like you back, or even to be there, you have to donate. It's very simple. And, or, pardon me, you can also go online again to give to, number 2, WBAI.org. And you can do two things there. There's, on the far left of the page, you'll barely see this little gray thing that says WBAI Transmitter Fund. And to the right of that, here's where I get subversive, there's a thing that says make an e-donation for your favorite show. So what you can do is you go there and you choose the amount that you want to pledge, $5, $10, $1,000, whatever. And then you can choose Hour of the Wolf as the show that inspired you, as it were, to call and pledge. And, you know, gee, it would do us good if you did that. Okay. So that's the first pitch. We're going to be doing a few pitches tonight because I got, you know, the station's got its survival. I've got an event next week. Daniel has a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stuff.
Everybody wants some money.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
But I would like to put in there that BAI is a worthwhile donation because there is no other radio station like it in New York City.
There really isn't.
And for the type of the progressive news that we get from BAI, the wellness and health discussions, the environmental discussions.
I should point out right now that the news programming is actually coming out of the news. The apartment of one of the news people.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
I believe you.
You know, so,
you just can't, there's that, the news that happens on this station, you know, you can't get it anywhere else on the air in New York City.
It's absolutely true.
And so it matters.
We're the only station carrying Al Jazeera.
You're right.
There is a cable TV outlet that has the TV, but we're the only broadcast outlet in New York that has Al Jazeera news, which is, you know, if you're a kind of person who really likes their news, for example, BBC News,
right. This
news, that news, Al Jazeera is a precious commodity.
True.
Because of its alternative point of view. You may not like who Al Jazeera is or what it is, that's fine. During the Vietnam War, remember that? When BAI was being famous for being anti-Vietnam War, we carried Agence France-Presse, AFP, a major news service, and we were demonized for carrying it because they had reporters in Hanoi.
Right.
So, obviously, we were traitors, obviously, you know, because we took news that came from Hanoi. Al Jazeera is hardly that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I just like to remind people who Mitch and Bone about us having Al Jazeera, that this is about having open radio, aside from the fact that their news is pretty darn good.
Do you get that complaint?
Oh, God, yes.
Goodness gracious.
Yes, not only do we get that complaint, we have people who I won't name who have been associated with the station who would refuse to do programs because we are now affiliated. And we're not affiliated. We're just carrying the audio portion of their TV news. Yeah, right? I have a complaint. I do have a problem carrying it. My problem is a very simple one. We're carrying the audio of a TV show. And that's what Max is spending all of his time doing. It is making the television show radio worthy.
Right.
So we're spending the money of an employee to convert the TV show into radio. That's my complaint, and I think it's a legitimate one. It's not about the source. And it is about the source. It's about the medium.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you mean.
Is the medium well done? Anyway. So, yeah, it is. BAI is a precious commodity. It really is. I was saying, this is a pitch I did a few weeks ago, and I'm going to do it again very briefly, and then we're going to get off the subject if you're calling 516-620-3602, which is, you know, the old trope is, what if you tuned in and WBAI wasn't there? Well, you see, I'm going to turn that one around. What if I came here and WBAI wasn't here? What would I do? Where can a person go to produce free-form speculative fiction programming? You know, there's a show on WUSB, Destinies, which is, Howard Margolin has been doing the show. He's a newbie. He's only been doing it since the late 70s. I've been here since the early 70s. I've been here since 1967. Howard the Wolf has been here since 72. Anyway. And even then, he's covering it on a different level. We're very different kinds of programs. I dare say there is no other program very similar to Hour of the Wolf at all, anywhere in the country.
I don't know of any.
Yeah, and I'll take it a step further, in the world. So what would one do? I know not. Okay, so again, 516-620-3602. Next thing. The New York Review of Science Fiction Reading, something that Daniel has performed at.
Twice.
Yeah, so far. And
more to come.
Soon again, I hope.
For sure.
This coming Tuesday, April 2nd, April Fool's Day plus one, our readers will be Kit Reed and Karen Hewler, both of them really just, well, dynamite writers, each one of them with new books. Karen Hewler's stories have appeared in over 60 literary and speculative fiction magazines and anthologies. She's published three novels and a short story collection with university presses. Is it Chizine or Chizine? The C-H-I-Z-I-N-E.
I say it different every time.
Oh, okay. So we'll do it different every time. This time it's Chizine. Chizine Publications just released her latest collection, The Inner City, which was listed in Publisher Weekly's Top 10 Spring Science Fiction Fantasy Books. She's received the O. Henry Award. She's been shortlisted for the Pushcart Prize, for the Iowa Short Fiction Award, the Bellwether Award, and the Shirley Jackson Award for short fiction. So, you know, not fooling around with Karen Hewler.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kit Reed has two new books this year. Her spontaneous human combustion novel, Son of Destruction, from Seven House, and her best of collection, The Story Until Now, which is from Wesleyan University Press. So each of these women are publishing from university presses, which is usually a very cool sign. Wesleyan also publishes Samuel R. Delaney and, you know, Joanna Russ and slouches like that. So, she's in only the best company. And let's see, her earlier books include What Wolves Know from PS Publishing, a Shirley Jackson Award nominee in 2011, and Enclave from Tor. She is currently the resident writer at Wesleyan University. So that is this coming Tuesday. Admission is free. Donations are solicited so we can buy dinner for our readers. And this is at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art at 138 Sullivan Street. That's on the streets between Houston and the street formerly known as Prince. And that will bring you there. That's
Do you say that every time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. Well, every other time, anyway. Right. 2 out of 3 times. Yes, yes, Max. Thank you. Max has victuals that are out there, so he's waved them in. So, let's see. Is there anything else that needs to be mentioned offhand? Well, we're already 22 minutes into broadcast, and Daniel has a reading that's practically half an hour, right?
No.
And things to talk about. Well, you said, this is from Salsa. You have a piece from Salsa Nocturna.
It's about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, but you don't read too fast.
I'll read slow.
You read slow.
I'll read extra slow for you.
Yeah, you do that. I mean, you always have your pace exactly right.
Thank you.
When you're with your music.
Oh, you know, the last time I was here, I was reading it fast. I recall it.
Yeah, and I said something.
Short for time or something. Yes. I did speed through it a little bit.
Yeah. And, but whereas Daniel's also really a top notch composer.
Thank you.
You can go see him perform a couple of times I've seen you have been at the New Yorican Cafe,
mm-hmm.
which New Yorican. Poets Cafe. I always leave out that extra P.
Another cultural landmark.
Yeah, absolutely. And a place from which WBAI used to broadcast weekly.
True.
And that's going back a few years. We were certainly doing that in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I used to go there all the time to engineer. It's one of the cooler, along with SOBs, where there was a benefit earlier tonight, and some other places, one of the cooler venues in New York City. But what Daniel does, reading his prose with his composition and a three-piece band on which you're playing guitar.
Bass.
And there's a percussionist, mm-hmm. whether they're playing, you know, like a trap set or...
Sometimes it's a cajon.
Which is a word that sounds like something you're not supposed to say on the air.
But I just did.
Yeah. For those who don't know, that's sort of like, it's not exactly a drum set. It's almost like an electroshock bongo.
It's a box.
It's a box that can emulate all kinds of percussive sound.
Yes.
And I'd never seen one before.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It does for percussion what the electric piano does for keyboards. I think it's fair.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a synthesizer of sorts, but with percussion in mind.
Interesting. I thought of it that way.
Yeah. Well, that was my perception, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of keyboards, then you often perform with...
Aki Bermis.
Right. And he's...
Magnificent.
Yeah, and he's a good vocalist, too.
Yeah, he's an incredible singer.
Yeah. And to hear, you know, there's the experience of hearing Daniel's music, which you can do at, is it ghoststar.com?
It's ghoststar.net.
.net. Ghoststar. One word, ghoststar.net. So that's where you can hear music, and you can also read some of Daniel's fiction online in a couple of places. But
there, the fiction is there.
But the combination of the two, the multimedia aspect of it, is for me what makes the difference between something that's really good and just fabulous, great performance art.
Thank you.
So now you actually had a specific reason for wanting to be on before March expired.
This is true. Expired is a good word for it.
Yeah.
So the publishers who put out Salsa Nocturna, Cross Genres Publications, which is
Bart Lieb and Kay Holt.
A terrific. Let me say that Salsa Nocturna, putting that book together was such an amazing experience because they know how to do things right. Because they're amazing editors and amazing publishers.
Mm-hmm. And who is your...
Kay Holt
edited. Kay was the editor
Salsa
on
Nocturna.
That one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they're an amazing team.
Yeah,
they handle everything so well all together. Kay did amazing work with me as far as editing, and the process, you know, was just fantastic. So I'm excited to work with them again. And what we're doing is an anthology of speculative fiction from the margins of history. Rose Fox of Publishers Weekly is my co-editor, an amazing person as well.
Who's also been a curator, a guest curator at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings.
Exactly.
And also the program director for ReaderCon.
Right. So a lot of good people involved already. The anthology is called Long Hidden. We're boosting it on Twitter with the hashtag Long Hidden. And right now we are running a Kickstarter campaign to fund it. So we were trying to get an initial fundraising goal of $12,000, which we got in the first week, and kind of blew everybody away because we really didn't.
I don't know what it is. Every time Bart does a Kickstarter,
Bart is a master of the Kickstarter.
He kicks it out of the field, yes. over the goal.
He's kind of like
and
a
into
Kickstarter
the next stadium. He's amazing.
Genius. Yeah. And I think in this case too, it was a combination of an idea that people are very excited about and a very, very efficiently managed Kickstarter. And together, that's a power combination. So we are right now trying to get to our... We went past our first stretch goal, which was $15,000, and which enables us to... let's see, I'm getting confused.
$12,000.
The first one is $12,000. That's the initial one. So we are fully funded. The stretch goals allow us to make the book 10 stories longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, that's right, we are writing a song. We're writing an original theme song for the book. Now,
most books
don't have theme songs. Rose is an amazing musician, and I do my thing every once in a while. So together we're going to write a song, which is the theme song for Long Hidden. Now, Rose already sent me some of the beginning of what we're going to work on, and it's amazing. Can't share it yet, but it's exciting things happening. So what we're trying to do, we really only have 3 days left. Right now we're almost $23,000, and we're trying to reach 30 so that we are able to get illustrations for the book, which would be an amazing thing. Illustrations, people are excited, and these illustrations are going to be amazing. I can already tell because I've seen some of the ideas that have been coming out about what people are going to write, and this book is magic already. Just the process so far has been so incredible to hear different people's experiences of why this matters. You know, we have so much speculative fiction and so much historical fiction, and folks whose lives are not told in mainstream history or in mainstream sci-fi, fantasy, or horror. It's time that we spoke up. It's time that we have more of a venue. It's time that we get into the mainstream and say things loudly and say things in our true voice. It doesn't happen enough. So this book is our, as I said on Twitter, it's our way of lighting a candle instead of just railing at the darkness. So a lot of people have latched onto it, and it's exciting. A lot of voices are coming out, speaking out for it. I'm going to read just a quick... I'm going to read some of the authors that are sending us stories, because it's quite a list. But it includes Alaya Don Johnson, Victor Laval, Sarah McCary, Nisha Meminger, Nnedi Okorafor, Kini Ibura Salam, Veronica Shanos, Rian Amilcar Scott, Kima Jones, Nisi Shaw, Troy Wiggins, Linda Addison, Tananarive Du, Andrea Hairston, Amal El Motar, Jennifer Marie Brissett, Chesia Burke, Beverly Jenkins, Ken Liu, and there's some more in there too. It's a lot of that right there. That's a lot of amazing people. So I know Rose and I are really excited to read all the submissions, and folks have been really excited to write the submissions, and I can't wait to see what is going to come out of this. So the time period that we're looking at is between 1400 and 1920,
mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a speculative aspect. We're opening to submissions at the end of the month.
At the end of March?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But for the rest of March, what we're trying to do is reach this $30,000. Right now, we're a little ways from there, so we need donations. If you go to my website, there's a button to take you right to the Kickstarter.
Okay. That's GhoStar.net.
My website is GhoStar.net. GhoStar.net. And right at the bottom in the center, there's a button that will take you right to the Kickstarter. There's prizes. There's autographed books. I don't know if there are any critique sessions left, but we were offering critiques of manuscripts. I think that one got taken. One of them, which is $500, is to have a private performance from Ghost Star, whose music you can hear on the website. So, and
by the way, I'm looking for Ghost Waltz and not seeing it.
Oh, is it not up there?
Yeah, should be up there. Not seeing it. I'm seeing Ghost Star, Salsa Nocturna, where Brooklyn meets Queens.
You could do Salsa Nocturna. That's
okay.
Song,
so. Fine. Yeah. Okay.
So go check it out. Look at the Kickstarter. Look at the prizes. Look at the amazing writers that are going to be contributing. And understand that this is a project that is unlike any other. There's a lot of anthologies and there's a lot of different ideas out there. And we have not seen anything quite like this, which is why I think it has spoken to so many people already, even before it exists. Why I think the support has been so overwhelming to, you know, get us over that first initial hump. So quickly, kind of incredible. I think everyone was really, I mean, I think we were hoping for the best, obviously, but no one knew exactly what to expect. But and basically, as soon as we opened the door, the contributions were just overwhelming. So we're really, really excited. Check it out.
Yeah. And by the way, this is WBAI New York City. I just noticed time for a proper break. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM for at least the nonce. And so Salsa Nocturna, the novel at this point, has been officially out for a while.
Came out in July.
Yeah.
A collection of short stories, not a novel. But yeah.
Right.
Although they are very linked. And
they are very linked. It's not quite a mosaic novel, but it has the feel of one. It has the feel of interrelated, interconnected stories
Indeed.
In the manner of, like Rick Bowes, who will be on the show next week. That's mm-hmm. He specializes in that, in mm-hmm. fixing up stories so that they become novels.
Right.
He's got a new one coming out, which is why he's...
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's got like two new books coming out for
he's
the next
prolific
couple
dude.
Months. Yeah, he is. And a brilliant, brilliant writer.
Indeed, he is.
Yeah. So...
It's been out since July. And we've, like you said, we've done a couple different performances. We did three at the New Eurekan, and we did one at La Casa Azul most recently, which is an excellent Latino bookstore. Everyone should check it out. It's in Harlem. It's 103rd and Lexington. Amazing
okay.
spot. They pretty much function also as a community organization. They do amazing
See,
events.
Now that we're a Harlem radio station,
right.
we can go, excuse me, we're West Harlem.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's East Harlem.
True.
You know,
that is definitely East
that's
Harlem.
That's all the way the other side of Vinegar Hill.
Spanish
you know.
Harlem.
Yeah.
But it's a great bookstore. They're doing amazing things. They had Juno Diaz the night before I performed. And
anybody good? Anybody good?
Anybody else?
I'm being snotty because Gino Diaz is simply one of the best writers in the world,
bar none.
He's really
He actually stopped through when I was performing. I didn't get a chance
to
meet him because I was on stage. But
yeah, right.
I know. I was like, what?
But just to know that he was there when you were there.
It is exciting. He's really incredible.
Yeah.
I mean... I think it goes without saying, but he certainly...
No, it goes with saying. People listening should know Junot Diaz, one of the great New York writers and one of the great writers in the world. And a lot, you know, there are people listening.
Is he a New York writer? He's kind of a New Jersey writer.
I'm not sure. I just know he performs in New York.
He does.
A good
Well, he's at MIT now, so I guess he's a Boston
guy. Ah, turncoat.
I don't know if he was ever an NYC guy. I think he's more Jersey. But anyway.
Jersey, yeah.
He's amazing.
Jersey is a suburb of New York. People have to recognize that.
You know what?
Yeah.
You're going to feel those phone calls. I did not say that.
I used to work in Jersey City.
Okay.
And the provincialism of like how, you know, never mind the fact that you look out the window of where you work and you see the Manhattan skyline. They were like, this isn't New York. We're not a part of New York. And it's...
Well, you know.
I won't mention the name of the institution, but they could have doubled and tripled the attendance at this institution if they ever bothered marketing to New York. So therefore... Well, and besides, how many people do we know who consider themselves New Yorkers, work in New York and all that, who travel in from Hoboken and Jersey City?
I'm gonna stay out of this whole conversation.
It's a rhetorical.
You are
question.
On your own.
let's put it this way: yes, it is easier to get to major parts of Manhattan from Jersey,
right,
than it is from parts of Queens and Brooklyn,
true,
and the Bronx.
What's interesting is Staten Island is actually a suburb of Connecticut.
Well, actually, Staten Island, and this is true.
You just blank stared.
Are
me,
you ready?
Go ahead.
Staten Island is a part of Sweden.
Okay.
I am not joking.
Now I'm blank staring.
Okay. It's a geographic thing involving plate tectonics and all that. The actual physical land that Staten Island is on links to Sweden.
That explains a lot, actually. It makes things make sense.
It is. This is an actual scientific fact. I learned this from a wonderful book by Bill Bryson called A Short History of Nearly Everything. But that is, in fact, utterly true. Utterly true. Very bizarre.
Interesting.
And utterly true. Hmm. So there you go.
Anyway. Performed at La Casa Azul.
Careful, by the way, when you hit that
table. Oh, does
table.
Everyone hear it?
Yeah, well yeah. Goes
I'm
through,
an animated
you
talker.
See those springs on the table?
Yes.
The ones holding up your microphone?
Oh, yeah.
They go boing. Every time you hit the table, they go boing.
Cool.
So it's very good for sound effects.
Well, keep
not
that in
so,
mind.
Not yeah. so good for
right. That's why I don't have the headphones on.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, the book has been out since July. It's been, I have to say the responses have been phenomenal, both in my inbox and the reviews and, the reactions that people have had to the stories. And, it's always fascinating, you know, with a collection of short stories, you get to hear everyone's take. And one of the cool things about social media, of course, too, is that when people are reading it, they live tweet, you know, what their reactions are, which is an amazing gift for an author. I mean, people talk a lot of trash about social media and this, that, and the other, and whatever, whatever. But listen, from an author's point of view, to be able to get people's live reactions to your work while they're reading it and, you know, be privy to all that, the good and the bad, is an amazing experience. Yeah. It is an amazing form of critique and form of understanding who your audience is and also just interacting because, you know, they can ask questions, they can pick your brain about it, and it's just been fascinating. And, you know, storytelling is a powerful thing. And I think the experience of Salsa Nocturna has just reinforced that and taught me about the power of storytelling to a whole new level.
So why don't we hear an example?
Sure.
Are you ready or you want to break first?
No, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm always ready.
So, this is a complete short story, so this doesn't really need any talk up.
None.
Okay, so I'm going to kill my mic.
Okay.
Oh, that's much better, by the way. Trust me. Okay.
Okay. Salsa Nocturna. Sorry. Salsa Nocturna. People say that all musical geniuses die in the gutter. And I've made my peace with that. But this is ridiculous. Anyway, it's a boiler room. But let me start at the beginning. The whole gigging around at late-night bars and social clubs really began drying up right around the time the Great White Flight did a Great White About-Face. Most of my main night spots shut down or started serving cappuccino instead of El Presidente. Two of my guys moved to Philly. Things were looking kind of grim, to be honest with you. I mean, me. I knew that it would work out in the long run. It's not that I'm an optimist. There's just certain things I do know. But meanwhile, the short one run was kicking my ass, kicking all of our asses, really. So when my son's girl, Janie, came to me about this gig at the Overnight Center, I had to pay her some mind. Janie's a special kid, I gotta say. I couldn't ask for a better woman for Ernesto, either. She keeps him in line, reminds him, I think, where he is from, that he's more than that fancy suit he puts on every morning. And she makes us all laugh at that mouth of hers, too. Anyway, she comes to me one morning while I'm taking my morning medicina, with my café con leche and bacon, eggs, and papas fritas. I always take my high blood pressure pills with a side of bacon or sausage, you know, for balance. Gordo, she says. My name is Ernesto, too, just like my son, but everyone calls me Gordo. It's not because I'm fat. Okay, it's because I'm fat. Gordo, she says. I want you to come interview at this place I work on Lorimer. You see what she did? She made it look like I would be doing her the favor. She's a smart girl, Janie. I eyed her coolly and put some more bacon in me. They need someone to watch the kids at night, and later on, maybe you can teach music in the mornings. Kids? I said. What makes you think I want to have anything to do with kids? Listen, there's two kinds of people that are really drawn to me. Kids and dead people. Oh yeah, and crackheads on the street. But that hardly counts because they obviously have an agenda. Kids seek me out like I'm made of candy. They find me and then they attach themselves to me and they don't let go. Maybe it's because I don't really buy into that whole aren't they cute crap. I just take them as they come. If I walk onto a playground, and I swear to you, I am never the instigator. It's like some memo goes out. Drop whatever game you're playing and come chase the fat guy. Family events and holidays? Forget it. I don't really mind, because I hate small talk. And if there's one thing about kids, they give it to you straight. Tio gordo, why are you so big? And I get real serious looking. Because I eat so many children, I say. And then they run off screaming, and usually I give chase until I start wheezing. Anyway, it beats how's the music business or, oh, really? How interesting. Because really and truly, I don't care how everyone's little seed is doing at CUNY or whatever. I'm not bragging, but even teenagers like me. They don't admit it most of the time, but I can tell. They're just like overgrown, hairy 5-year-olds anyway. Also, notoriously poor small talkers. Janie told me exactly how it would go down and exactly what to say. She's been doing this whole thing for a while now, so she speaks white lady-ese like a pro. She had this Nancy lady down pat, too, from the extra, extra smile to the cautious handshake to the little sing-song apologies dangling off every phrase. Everything went just like she said it would. The words felt awkward in my mouth like pieces of food that are too big to chew, and I thought that Nancy was on to me right up until she says, "That sounds terrific, Mr. Cortinas." You can call me Gordo, I say. It's called a non-profit. But everyone at the office is obviously making a killing. The kids are called minority and emotionally challenged, but there's a lot more of them, and they show a lot more emotions than the staff. It's a care facility, but the windows are barred. The list goes on and on, but still, you know, I like my job. The building's one of these old Gothic numbers on the not-yet-gentrified end of Lorimer. Used to be an opera house or something, so it's still got all that good rundown music hall juju working for it. I show up at 9 p.m. on the dot, because Janie said my sloppy Cuban time won't cut it here. So just pretend I'm supposed to be there at 8, and I'll be all right. And it works. They set up a little desk for me by a window on the 5th floor. Outside, I can see the yard and past that a little park. I find that if I smoke my malagueñas in the middle of the hallway, the smell lingers like an aloof one-night stand till the morning, and I get a stern apologetic talking to from Nancy and then a curse out from Janie. So I smoke out the window. It's a good thing that most of the kids are already sleeping by the time I arrive, because even as it is, I can feel my presence course through the building like an electrical current. I can't help it. Occasionally, a little booger will get up to make a number one or a number two and not want to go back to bed. I make like I'm gonna slap them, and they scatter back to their rooms. Soon, they'll be on to me, though. A little after midnight, the muertos show up. They're always in their Sunday best, dressed to the nines, as they say, in pinstripe suits and fancy dresses. Some of them even have those crazy Spanish flamenco skirts on. They wear expensive hats and white gloves. While the children sleep, the muertos gather around my little desk on the 5th-floor foyer and carry on. Mostly they dance, but a few of them bring instruments, old wooden guitars and basses, tambores, trumpets. Some of them show up with strange ones that I've never seen before, African, I think, and then I have to figure out how to transpose whatever it is into the piano horn section arrangements that I'm used to. Look, their music is close enough to what I'd write anyway, so either they're some part of my subconscious or it's a huge supernatural coincidence. And really, what are the chances? So either way, I don't feel bad jotting down the songs. Besides, I started bringing my own little toy store carry-along keyboard and accompanying them. Of course, I keep the volume low so as not to wake up the little ones. There is a jangle to the music of the dead. I mean that certain something that is so happy, so sad at the same time. The notes almost make a perfect harmony, but they don't. And then they do, but quickly crash into dissonance. They simmer in that sweet in-between, rhythm section rattling along all the while, chords collapse chaotically into each other, and just when you think the whole thing is gonna spill into total nonsense, it stands back up and comes through sweet as a lullaby on your mommy's lips. Songs that'll make people tap their feet and drink melancholically, but not realize the twisting genius lurking within until generations later. That's the kind of music that I make, and the dead do too. We make it together. Tonight was different, though. The muertos didn't show up. They never scared me. If anything, they kept me company in those wee hours. But this silence, it made me shiver and feel like I was both being watched by 1,000 unfriendly eyes and all alone in the world. I looked down that empty hallway, tried to imagine my brand new, long-lost friends making their shadowy way up towards me, but it remained empty. Just to have something to do, I made the rounds, each troubled young lump in its curled-up spot. Some nights, when I don't feel like doing my music, I read their files. Their twisted little sagas unwind through evaluation forms and concerned emails. Julio plays with himself at mealtimes. Devon isn't allowed near mirrors on the anniversary of his rape. Tiffany hides knives in case the faceless men come back for her. But night after night, they circle into themselves like those little curl-up bugs, and they drift off to sleep. One bed, though, was empty. The cut-out construction paper letters on the door spelled Marcos, a little Ecuadorian kid, if I remember his file right. Untold horrors, rarely spoke. The muertos being gone was bad in a supernatural, my immortal soul kind of way. And Marcos being gone was bad in a frowning Nancy in the morning, lose my job kind of way. And I wasn't really sure which was worse. I turned and walked very quickly back down the hallway. First, I spot-checked all the rooms I'd already passed, just in case little man was crouching in one of the corners unnoticed. But I knew that he wasn't. I knew. Wherever Marcos was, there would be a whole lot of swaying shrouds with him. Remember I told you sometimes I just know stuff? This was one of those things. Besides, I don't believe in coincidence. Not when kids and the dead are involved. When I got to the end of the hallway, I stood still and just panted and sweated for a minute. That's when I heard the noise coming from one of the floors below. It was just barely there. A ghost of a sound, really, and kept fading and coming back, like the little twinkling of a music box, far, far away.
se siente tan cansado. Me siento paz inmensa en el sufrir.
To the untrained eye, I appear bumbling. You can see my blood vessels strained tight to support my girth. My hands are ungainly and calloused. For a man who makes such heart-wrenching subtle melodies, I am not delicate. But if you were to watch me in slow-mo, you would then understand that really, I am a panther. A slow, overweight panther, perhaps, but still, there is a fluidity to me, a certain poise. I flowed, gigantic and cat-like, down the 5 flights of stairs to the lobby, pausing at each landing to catch my breath and check for signs of stroke or heart attack, infarto in Spanish, so that in addition to perhaps dying, you have the added discomfort of it sounding like you were laid low by a stinky shot of gas. The lobby is covered in posters that are supposed to make the children feel better about having been abused and discarded. Baby animals snuggle amidst watercolor nature drawings. It's a little creepy. The noise was still coming from somewhere down below, definitely the basement. I wasn't thrilled about this, was hoping the muertos had simply gathered in the lobby, perhaps to enjoy the inspirational artwork. But I can't say I was surprised either. I opened the old wooden door that leads down the last flight of stairs and took a deep breath. Each step registered my presence unenthusiastically. At the bottom, I reached into the darkness till my hand swatted a dangling chain. The bulb was dim. It cast an uneven, gloomy light on a cluttered universe of broken furniture, file cabinets, and forgotten papier-mâché projects. I followed the noise through the shadows. I could now make it out definitively to be a melody, a lonely, minor key melody, beautiful like a girl with one eye standing outside a graveyard. I rounded a corner and then held perfectly still. Before me hovered all my friends, the muertos, with their backs turned to me. I tried to see past them, but they were crowded together so densely it was impossible. Ever so quietly, I crept forward among them, their chilly, undead shadows sending tiny earthquakes down my spine. The muertos were gathered around a doorway. I entered and found myself in this dank boiler room. At the far end, little Marcos sat calmly in a niche of dusty pipes and wiring. He held my carry-along in his lap. His eyes were closed, and his fingers glided up and down the keys. Between myself and Marcos, about 30 small muertos, muertositos, bobbed up and down, their undivided attention on the boy. You know, I never think much about those who die as children, what their wandering souls must deal with, who watches over them, checks on those small curly-bug lumps at night. The ghost children were transfixed. I could feel their love for this boy and his music as surely as I felt the pulse pounding in my head. And, to be quite honest with you, at first I too found myself lost in the swirling cascade of notes coming from my little keyboard. It is rare that I feel humbled, rarer still that it would happen because of a 10-year-old, but I am not above admitting it. The song filled the heavy boiler room air, so familiar and so brand new. It was a mambo, but laced with the saddest melody I've ever heard, some unholy union of Mozart, Charlie Parker, and Perez Prado that seemed to speak of so many drunken nights and whispered promises. It tore into me, devoured me, and pieced me back together, a brand new man. But now, the song has ended, breaking the quiet reverie we had all fallen into and ripping open a great painful vacancy where it once had been. The rapture is over, and we are just in a boiler room, which is about as good as a gutter when it comes to places to die. I'm strong and not the addictive type, so I shake my head and welcome myself back to the strange silence. But the muertositos are not so quick to move on. A furious rustling ripples through their ranks, and the small illuminated shadows nudge towards Marcos. The boy looks up finally and turns to me, eyes wide. He starts to play the song again, but he's afraid now. His heart is not in it, and the ghostlings can tell. They continue their urgent sway, a tough crowd, and begin to edge closer to him. I carry a few saints with me, and I find more often than not they do their part. They tend to really come through when my more basic human instincts, like caution, fail. This is definitely one of those times. I surge, cat-like, through the crowd of wily young ghosts. Their cool tendrils cling to me like cobwebs, but I keep moving. I scoop up little man, and his living body feels so warm against me compared to all that death. He's still clutching the keyboard, eyes squeezed shut. His little heart sends a pitter-patter pulse out like an SOS. I decide if I pause to consider the situation around me, I may come to my senses, which would definitely mean an icy, uncomfortable death for myself and Marcos. So I make like a linebacker, fake left, swerve right, slowly, achingly, but gracefully, and then just plow down the middle. They're more ready for me this time, and angrier. The air is thick with their anger. Any minute the wrong molecule might collide and blow the whole place up. Also, I didn't gain quite the momentum that I'd hoped to. I can feel all that stillness reach far inside me, penetrate my most sacred places, throw webs across my inner shrines, detain my saints. It is seriously holding me up. But there is more music to write. I won't be around to see my legacy honored properly, but I have a few more compositions in me before I can sleep peacefully. Also, I enjoy my family and Saturday nights playing dominoes with the band after rehearsal and my morning cafe con leche, bacon, eggs, papas fritas, and sometimes sausage. Young Ernesto, who's not so young, and whatever crazy creation him and Janie will come up with in their late night house rocking, there are still things that I would like to see. Plus, this little fellow in my arms seems like he may have a long, satisfying career ahead of him. A little lonely, perhaps, but musical genius can be an all-consuming friend until you know how to tame her. I have room under my wing here, I realize as I plow through this wee succubus riot, and many things to tell young Marcos. Practical things, things that they don't teach about in books or grad school. Is trundle a word? It should be. I trundle through those creatures, tearing their sloppy ice tentacles from my body. The door comes up on me quicker than I thought it would, catches me a little off guard, and I'm so juiced up thinking of all the beautiful and sad truths I will tell Marcos when we survive that I just knock it out of the way. I don't stop to see how the mama and papa muertos feel about the situation. I move through them quick. At the corner, I glance back. An intervention of some kind seems to be taking place. The muertos have encircled their young. I can only suppose what must be happening, but I'd like to believe it's a solid scolding, an ass-beating like the one I would have gotten from Papi, God rest his troubled soul, if I'd trapped one of my younger brothers in the basement and made like I was going to end them. When we reach the come-on-get-happy lobby, I notice that dawn is edging out onto the streets. Marcos's song must have been longer than I realized. I put the boy down, mostly because I'm losing feeling in the lower half of my body and my shirt is caked in sweat. Wrap my fat hand around the banister and slowly, languidly, huff and puff up the stairs behind him. I pause on the landing, listen to the quick echoing tack, tack, tack of his footfall, bound up the next three flights. He will be curled up in his bed by the time I reach the second floor, asleep by sunrise. At 6, the morning crew will come in. Smiles first, and I will chuckle with them nonchalantly about the long, uneventful night. Tomorrow evening, as I show my new student a few tricks to keep his chops up, my friends will return. In their Sunday best, they will slither, as always, from the shadows of the fifth-floor hallway, and this time they will bring their young along with them.
Ghost Waltz, written and performed by Daniel Jose Older, and before that you heard said Daniel Jose Older reading from the collection Salsa Nocturna. Which piece was that? That was the title story.
Yes, I did. The track you just played, I didn't actually perform. I wrote it though. The previous track that we played
in the middle. I was assuming it was Ghost Star.
I'm not that good on the piano at all. As I was saying earlier, that's actually a piece I did in college that magically still fits with the themes that I'm working on now.
Yeah, and it's a classic waltz in its way.
Indeed it is. Yeah. Accordion, cello, and piano.
Yeah, and you know, given the title, by the way, the appropriateness, I mean, the show's called Hour of the Wolf. Hour of the Wolf really takes place. It's the morning dawn. Mm-hmm. That's when the Varg Teeman, which is where the name Hour of the Wolf derives from, actually occurs. This hour, though, Salsa Nocturna is sort of perfect, you know. It's like, yeah, what sauce of the night? I'm not quite, you figure out.
Yeah.
You know, not too caliente, just, you know.
Right. You don't know how many people ask if it's a cookbook.
Hey, there's
always
a
cracks
thought.
Me up, but no.
Yeah, just because the word salsa is in there? Oh,
I guess
for God's sake.
But yeah. I used to work the graveyard shift for most of my career as a paramedic. I would work the graveyards in Brooklyn. And a lot of these stories come out of that experience.
Yeah, now you're still a paramedic.
I am still a paramedic, but I work during the day now.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but I'm a paramedic for a couple more months.
Only a
couple more months.
Okay, this is news to me.
Yeah, I think I announced it on Twitter yesterday. But
I'm more of a radio person than a Twitter person. To me, radio is the original social media, and it still works.
Twitter is the new radio. Is that what you're saying?
No. What I'm saying is radio.
Radio is
the new
old
radio.
Twitter.
All right, no, radio is the new radio. It's like, you know, we can, you know.
True.
Keep on doing this. And if we want to hear from other people, we can even theoretically have them
call
in.
Shall we try?
We're going to try. I don't know. We have two phone lines here. This is like, you know, I really wonder, I have heard mixed things from other staff members, how well it works. But we do have a phone here. We have a pot for the phone. Do not try calling any of the old numbers. They don't work. The number here at alleged WBAI. And, of course, I have to face away, you know, from my guest. So in order for me to look at the phone,
rude.
I have to talk like this. And not only rude, because you're facing away from the guest, but it's also totally off mic, unless I put the mic here and then I'm looking at nothing.
Yeah, whatsoever. You guys need money.
But the phone, but the phone number here is area code 212. I know what to do. Actually, this sort of works. I can pull the phone over here right on top of the console. 212-650-5782. Again, 212-650-5782. And we can allegedly take calls in the air, for which, by the way, you're going to need headphones.
Got them.
You can ask. And by the way, if you want to read one of the most interesting blogs on being a paramedic.
Thank you.
It's really scintillating stuff. Well, we're getting a call. Let's see if we can actually put it on the air.
Hey, tell them where to find the blog.
You do that. Blog is...
It's all at my website.
So it's all at GhostStar.net.
GhostStar.net.
Yeah,
you can hear the music. You can read the blog. There's also fiction. I also blog about writing, which no one seems to know or care about. But I do. So, you know, check it out over there, too.
Okay. So let's try this out. Hello, you're on the radio.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Robert. Okay. So it actually works somehow.
It does. Well, you obviously made it home safely from Lunacon.
After a fashion, yes.
Well, I hope you had a good time there. Great on-the-air show you did.
Yes, which we actually broadcast last week.
Yeah, well, I was in Britain, so I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Anyway.
Yes, you could. You know, called the Internet.
I was in a pub making music until dawn. Anyway, I don't know what images, Daniel, but I'll tell you the feeling I'm getting. I'm getting the same feeling I got in a graveyard in South Texas a number of years ago when I spent a night celebrating the Day of the Dead with a bunch of local musicians, and I'm not sure half of them were human.
Well, on the Day of the Dead, that would be appropriate if they weren't.
They were serving little...
Or ex-human.
Yeah, they were serving little cakes like skulls and ghost things. I have to tell you, if you were going to create a name of a musical group that's out of this world, what a great name, Los Muertos.
Mm.
I like that.
True.
And I think
are the Grateful Muertos.
Yeah. I have to figure out what that word would be. You and I, Daniel, once discussed briefly Cuban folklore.
Yeah, I recall.
And we discussed characters like El Bizarrón and some other things. Now, I have to ask you.
We're not discussing Cajon again, are we?
No. Okay. But I'll tell you, there's a town in California by that name, and actually the word in some instances means coffin.
Yes.
Really? Okay. Yes, so, that's probably where the musical instrument gets its name from, the musical instrument looks a little something like a coffin if you think about it.
What does it look like,
Daniel? It's a big box, which is where the name comes from. Kaha is box. Yeah. So the own part makes it bigger.
Yeah, but it's got a ridge in the middle. Wouldn't you say it's a little bit coffin shaped?
Not exactly, but it could pass for a coffin. It works. It certainly fits a coffin for a tiny square person.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to ask you about your you called it Hidden Away. Is that the title?
Long Hidden is the anthology title. Yes.
As a historian, let me see if I get this right. This is a collection based on marginal histories, not in the mainstream, from 1400 to 1920.
Correct.
When you say marginal history, you mean history of groups or places that nobody knows about? Because if this is true as a historian, you're making my earlobes jump up and down like a Ferengi who suddenly becomes...
I don't want to see that. I really don't want to see
that. That was a Star Trek simile.
Yeah. But as a historian, this concept sounds like it's made in heaven.
Oh, thank you. I think...
Tell me about it.
By marginal, we're speaking, yes, of groups and places that aren't heard of or known so much, but also stories that have been told incorrectly by mainstream history. So we're talking about people of color, we're talking about LGBTQ folks, we're talking about women, we're talking about trans folks, we're talking about poor folks. The majority of people in the world have had our stories told wrong.
Say free colonies of non-Caucasians hidden away somewhere in Brazil that nobody ever heard about?
Absolutely. That would go under that category, yes. Absolutely. So all those things. And then there's a speculative aspect. It is a collection of speculative fiction. So.
And how much of the collection did you ask your authors to sort of delve into, they say, their own oral traditions for this? Ooh.
We haven't put any kind of guidelines as far as where authors have to go. I'm sure some are looking at their own folks and some are going outside of themselves.
That's up to the authors.
It's totally up to the authors.
No, I understand that. But somehow I think your collection, Daniel, proves an epiphany that I once had. I asked one of my students one time to go up and write on the board the following. I said, write the word history, and look at it, and tell me what you think. And one of them actually, because occasionally you have among students even a diamond in the rough, one of my students said, yes, history has seven letters, five of which make up the word story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked her to write the following. You cannot have history without story, and you cannot have story without music. You cannot have story without history, and I want to add a third. You cannot have story without music, and you cannot have music without story.
Mm. True.
Anyway, good luck to you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate
that. As they say in Cuba, a dog must have four feet, but they must all go in the same direction and work together.
Indeed.
Good night.
Good night. Yes.
Okay, so, that's our first official phone call on Hour of the Wolf at out of Harlem in our new facilities.
Congratulations.
Yeah, okay. Let's see if we can do it twice.
All right.
Telephone number is area code 212-5... 212-650-5782. We are so much in the experimental phase. I mean, we haven't had phones that we could use on the air for a whole week here yet.
I tweeted you the picture, by the way.
I'm sorry?
I tweeted you the picture.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it's up. So my Twitter feed is DJ Older, DJOLDER.
That's absolutely what I put up, and it shows me that the picture is up under yours, but on my camera,
right.
it just says, and there it is. Yeah, you're using YFrog. On mine, it says that it's still sending it. I don't know why. It's very strange.
Very strange. Well, at least it's there.
Yeah,
somewhere.
At least it made it. And if you want to see that picture, it's a picture I took of Daniel while he was reading the first part of the story. Go to Twitter and look up DJ Older.
Yes, and you can also follow my ambulance adventures.
Yeah.
And writing adventures.
Yeah, which are all fairly... fascinating.
Ridiculous.
And musical adventures at GhostStar.net.
Yes.
Okay. So, And that was one of the first things I noted about you. Before Salsa Nocturna came out, mm-hmm. I first went to your website just to see what was going on, what you were about, and all that. And I'm trying to remember, how did we actually first meet? Because it was before...
It was when Cherie, Renee Thomas...
That was it, of course.
...put together the reading for the New York Review of Science Fiction.
Yes.
With Amma.
Yes, with Amma Patterson.
The wonderful Amma Patterson.
Who is... way overdue for a reading, Amma Patterson. I keep saying this.
Yeah, we got.
And one of these days, I got she's a busy woman. She's a lawyer and all that. She's a busy person, but I don't care, Amma. We need you either on the air in a recording, or we need you to come and do a Nursef reading. And Cherie, you're hopeless, down in Memphis. Over there. She's done some very cool things lately.
She's still doing things. Oh, they are hosting a competition. Ooh, I don't have the website. There's a competition that she's judging for speculative fiction by people of color.
Yeah.
If you Google that, it'll come up.
Yeah, I mean, just Google up Cherie, S-H-I-R-E-E, Renee.
E-R-E-E.
I keep getting that wrong. I always have, and she always gets after me for it. Cherie, Renee Thomas. The rest of it is pretty, R-E-N-E-E Thomas. Just Google that up. You will not find anything under that name that isn't worthwhile, particularly one of the best anthologies in speculative fiction ever put out. Dark Matter.
Two of them, actually.
Two of them. But the first one changed the history of spec fic.
She's just an amazing person all around.
And she is. Old-time listeners to Hour of the Wolf have heard her any number of times. Yeah. And, of course, people, attendees of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which she was curator of for 2 years.
Yes.
But when she had you and Amma, that was a guest curatorship. Mm-hmm. That was that she was back in New York for a little while and put that one back together. A lot of my favorite people, Terrence Taylor and all that, I have met through Cherie and Amma, for that matter. Cherie, I point out, I have a rap somewhere, and one of these days I'm going to write it up as an article or a blog or something, that there are anthologies that five anthologies that have changed the shape of science fiction. One of them is Star Science Fiction, edited by Frederick Pohl. That came out in the late 50s. That was, defining what SF was about at that moment. Then there was Dangerous Visions in the late 60s, which became the new wave movement, the idea of actually marrying literature to SF, which really hadn't happened a whole lot before that, and actually became a subgenre within. Mm. Then there's Women of Wonder, edited by Pamela Sargent, which, lo and behold, announced the entry of women without having to use names like C.L. Moore or something like that, or ambiguous names like Lee Brackett. Then there was Mirror Shades, from Bruce Sterling, which pretty much defined cyberpunk. Didn't just define it; it coined the term. The term was coined by a William Gibson story in that anthology. And then there's Dark Matter. And Dark Matter not only made people aware just how much SF there had been, almost surreptitiously, by people of color, but it also turned what were fans, people that were just going to conventions, who are black and Cubana or whatever, from being fans to actually actively writing. And each of those anthologies I have named changed literature.
True.
And Dark Matter 2, which is, what was it, not the Making the Bones? Is that the... Rolling the Bones? It's got bones in it.
Maybe Reading the Bones?
Reading the Bones, yeah. I think. Dark Matter 2, I think, continued from where Dark Matter turned off, took off and became the first book after it had been established. But it was Dark Matter that established it. Dark Matter 2 is a great book, but it didn't change science fiction. Her first book changed the entire literature. Without that book, science fiction is not what it is today. And I'll bet you somewhere in there, Bart Lieb and Kay Holt with Cross Genres Publishing, because their stuff is downright subversive. In fact, they have an anthology called Subversion and one called Menial. Which
I have a story in Subversion.
As does Barbara Krasnov. Mm-hmm. Yes. And Barbara's also in Menial.
Yes.
And if people read Cross Genres, it's a zine that every issue, as a magazine, every issue has a theme to it. And as a publisher, there is Salsa Nocturna mm-hmm. by you. There is, oh God help me.
Ink.
Ink by Selena.
Sabrina.
Sabrina.
Vervolius.
Vervolius.
Which is a terrific, incredible
book. I have got to get her.
Oh, you haven't read it yet?
I have. No, I've read it.
Oh, good. Okay.
I've got to get her on the air.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I have got to get her on the air. I hope she's coming to ReaderCon again.
Yes.
Because
yes.
of nothing. Oh,
we're doing a reading together.
Well, then.
Latinos in sci-fi.
Yeah, well, what I need
with Julia Rios, too.
A, I want to record that.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I also want to like get her aside and record a show with her.
Yeah, you should.
Because she is incredible.
She sure is.
And she read a short story last year with Barbara, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there.
And were you one of the readers at that time?
I sure was.
Oh, okay. And who else? There were five people.
I don't remember.
Or four people, yeah. It was a good read. It was a cross-genres reading.
Mm-hmm.
But I am predicting somewhere across genres, I think they're going to put out the sixth anthology one of these days.
Of Game Changers?
Yeah.
Well, I hope it's long hidden.
It may be. We'll see. But each of the ones that I mentioned, actually that would be a good name for an anthology. Game Changers.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Think about that one right there. I think you coined what it is that I've been talking about. But this is a rap I've had for years, ever since I first read Dark Matter, and it just opened up my eyes.
I love Dark Matter.
Oh, it's every one of the anthologies I just named are must reads.
Yes.
By everybody. From Star Science Fiction. Oh, Orbit. Orbit was another, but Orbit really sort of took off from where Dangerous Visions was the first to mine that territory, and Orbit, edited by Damon Knight and Kate Wilhelm, which is a series of 12 books. They mined that new wave area. So, let's see. Oh, my God.
The time moves fast.
Yeah, how about that?
Indeed.
Because we theoretically a minute or so. So, again, Long Hidden, tell us about it.
Long Hidden is an anthology of speculative fiction from the margins of history. We are currently fundraising for it on Kickstarter. You can support it by finding the Kickstarter page through my website, ghoststar.net, or if you Google Long Hidden, the Kickstarter will come up. On Twitter, it's hashtag Long Hidden. We have amazing authors that are contributing stories, and the book is going to be amazing. It's a lot of stories that need to be told and need to be heard. And everyone's really excited. So we have three more days to raise, $8,000, something? Quite a bit of money. We need your help. We would like to put illustrations in this book to make it even more amazing. You know, not enough books have illustrations. And
it's true.
I love, ever since I was a kid, you know, I did used to read books for the pictures. But especially, I just think, you know, speculative fiction, and especially speculative fiction from the margins of history, the idea just really lends itself to illustrations. I mean, it would just make it all the much cooler. So I hope we get it. I hope we reach that $30,000 goal. Send us some money. There's great prizes. And it's a great thing to be a part of. I think the great thing about Kickstarter and crowdsource funding is that you really get to play a part in something amazing, take part in it. So, you know, there's momentum, and that's what we're moving with.
And not to mention, you know, momentum and all that and fundraising. BAI needs to survive. You know, we have to pay that transmitter every month. We've gotten through the worst of it. We've gotten through the worst of it thanks to your phone calls. But there's still $50,000 just in transmitter rent to pay every month, and another $5,000 or $6,000 in room rent, plus salaries and all kinds of expenses. And then, if we survive, if we make it through August, WBAI has to find a new home. And we're not going to rent a new home. It's the other way around. We're going to buy one. We're going to own the property that we go to, and maybe we'll sublet or something, but we're going to own our new space, and that's going to be the deal. But we got to get from here to there, and we're not going to get from here to there without your donations at area code 516-620-3602. This coming Tuesday at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art, we have... I'm looking at just making sure I got the address right, because that's what the papers you're hearing. 138 Sullivan Street, downtown in Soho. Kit Reed and Karen Hewler, two brilliant, brilliant writers and two fine, fine readers. I hope that you will be there. Admission is free. And if you go every month, well, you'll actually get to see Daniel Jose Older. Well, Daniel, when's your next live performance? Do you have one lined up yet?
Don't.
You don't. So
I should.
So maybe it'll be at a nearsip reading.
Yes.
Anyhow.
Very possible. Look, it's springtime. We're gonna set one up soon.
Yeah. So this is Hour of the Wolf. This has been Hour of the Wolf. I will be back next week from 1:30 a.m. until 3 with guest Richard Bowes.
Who is awesome.
He is. Stay tuned for I don't know what. It should be either Lister or Ahmad Ami with Clapper, Burn Baby Burn. And oh, it looks like Lister coming through the monitor. So just keep your radio tuned in to 99.5 FM.
How you doing, people out there? This is comedian Barry Ribbs. I hope you tune in to 99.5 WBAI out of New York City. Listener-sponsored free speech radio.
I'd like to tell the crowd a little bit about myself. Sober now, by the grace of God, 3 hours. And ladies, I'm not going to have sex with any of you after the show. It's not that I don't want to. I'm just making a prediction.
FM WBAI, and we hope you come out March 28th to see a great comedy show.
The red, white, the blue, I'm not Captain America. Too black, too strong, causing mass hysteria. Trying to reach my freedom of speech. Expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth that's off the way I see it? Well, I'm going off berserk.
shit. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover. The red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag. Like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Wake up to the lies the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call it fist cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm busy attacking the flag. I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fascists and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the message must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
Listen to me, people, in this age of freedom, every man got to know what he's got within. Like baby Angela living next door, she'd been this up from the age of four. Nice up yourself in that rhythm of life, fire. Nice up yourself in that rhythm of life, fire. Nice up yourself in that.
WBAI, 10 minutes after 3 o'clock, yeah.
Said we don't have another 24 hours to waste. We dream of all that could be, but we just push it away. The more we think we're moving forward, we just keeping the pace. With the light that's faded from the clouds, so listen to me shout. If you can afford a dollar to take care of the pain, you're gonna feel it, and you're gonna be. Are broken down, they can barely flow. I can't hold my tongue, we just let it blow. So to push it out, use the words of your mouth to get it started. Do you want it? So we gonna pull some air. Won't you move your hands into the air? We gonna shout, ain't gonna stand down. Gonna pull some air. Come on, raise your voices so they hear. We gonna shout. Come on, raise your hand.
into it.